Fellas, ladies, are you about to get it on? Think about it. I know what's going on in your mind. Yeah, you're listening to a podcast now, maybe at gym or at work, but tonight you are going to go full on makeout mode and you want to protect yourself from all those STDs and all that stuff. So let me tell you about a brand new partner in the show, Skin Condoms. That's right. Skin Condoms are made from a revolutionary polysporine material called Skin Feel. Okay? They're softer, they're more comfortable than traditional latex, so both you and your partner get a natural feel full of sensitivity. You get to feel it all, but keep out everything that you don't want, okay? Now, while sex with skin is amazing for everyone, Skin Condoms are also completely safe for anyone with a latex allergy. So now, latex allergy, no latex allergy, put on these Skin Condoms and start doing it the right way, feeling good, feeling different. They're as safe as latex condoms, and they offer the same level of protection against pregnancy and STDs. So tonight, when you're banging or you're getting banged, make sure you put on Skin Condoms because you don't want no babies or STDs yet. Okay, if you think you're ready to make the plunge into Skin Condoms, head on over to buycondoms.online to explore Skin Condoms, personal lubricants, and more. And with the offer code BONKERS, that's B-O-N-K-E-R-S, you'll get free shipping on your first order no matter what you buy. How did this get made? Only sponsors one brand of condoms, and it's Skin Condoms. I have a brand new favorite podcast. It's weird. It's cool. It's different. Imagine if like Serial, the podcast, you know, totally made out with Lost and they created a baby that like was this amazing, cool, different kind of a podcast. It's kind of real. And also a little bit of science fiction. It's called The Tanis Podcast, and it's a docudrama about an ancient and mysterious myth, perhaps the last genuine mystery of the information age. Now, be clear, it's The Tanis, T-A-N-I-S, not tennis, The Tanis Podcast. It's so good. It's television for your ears. Okay, so download the podcast that The Guardian calls compelling and wildly addictive. That's The Guardian. They know their shit. They're guarding you from bad stuff. Anyway, you can get it at itunes.com/Tanis, T-A-N-I-S, or TanisPodcast.com. It's like Stand By Me meets Mac and Me meets Alien during John Carpenter's The Thing. And when you put all that together, you get a big old mess and shit aliens. We saw Dreamcatcher, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? Gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater. Cause you know you wonder, how did this get made? Let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I'm your host, Paul Scheer, joined, as always, by Jason Mantzoukas. How are you, Jason?
I'm all right, Paul. I am all right.
I am upset that June is still on maternity leave.
I watched this movie last night the entire time being like, oh, I wish June was going to be there to try and make sense of this.
Oh, this movie, I mean, the wig work alone and it would have really taken her down a path. But we have some amazing guests today to talk about this movie. And I am glad that they're here. Please welcome our first guest, a returning How Did This Get Made all-star from episode 5, Drive Angry. You know this guy. He writes on amazing shows like The Walking Dead and Leftovers and The Bastard Executioner and Narcos. He just recently sold a show to FX. Please welcome Curtis Gwynn.
Hi, how you doing? I'm flattered that you see if people would know me. TV writers are so well known.
No, they would know you from episode 5 of How Did This Get Made?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The listeners to this podcast, that's what they care about.
You're on a Nick Cage episode, a classic episode.
I appreciate it.
And someone who I want to say right before we started recording, said that he has read this book and watched this movie three times.
That's right.
Well,
that's right.
I was excited to bring you to this because I thought, I was like, oh, if there's somebody that could really talk about this movie, it will be Curtis. And I'm glad it worked out here. We also have another guest joining us today. She's awesome. Hilariously funny. She has a brand new ABC digital show called Serious Music. You've seen her on Comedy Bang Bang, the UCB show, and Party Over Here. Please welcome Jessica McKenna.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I'm really excited to ask you about that middle time you saw Dreamcatcher. I understand. I'm excited. Got to see the theater. I should refresh for this podcast. What's the middle time?
The middle time is, I feel like, the one where you're like, you know, I'm going to try and make sense of this.
Well, I did see the second. The middle time really was, I said it before we came in, you know, that I had locked myself out of my apartment in New York City. So I had actually seen it. Right. By my own volition. Then a week later, locked myself out of my apartment, went across the stage of the movie theater, and was like, middle of the day, it was the oh only thing, that, yeah. And I rewatched it.
So you saw it twice?
In 1 week.
You paid to see it twice in 1 week.
Like $10, $11.
But by the way, I would see this twice in the theater just because I rewound it many times going, what am I watching? And even when I tried to break down the plot, I was like, okay, so this is about, and again, just for you who've not seen it yet, I'll kind of... We're going to get into it.
Of all the Stephen King stories.
That's right.
Yes. Yeah.
I think it's all of them like crumbled into one.
So basically, if you were to really peel away all the layers of it, you would say an alien attack in a small town during a blizzard and four friends with psychic powers have to defeat it. I mean, that is, that is the most.
But it has, but there's also the added. The added Stephen Kingian kind of thing, which is these kids, these men, because it's four like grown men. It's Jason Lee, it's Homeland,
Timothy Oliphant,
Oliphant, and who's the fourth?
Tom Jane.
Oh God, Tom Jane, Punisher. So it's those four guys, but you flashback to when they're kids a lot, and so they've been being groomed by another alien who's on Earth. To prepare for the alien invasion.
Got it.
That's which right. They don't know. Yeah. Well, so there's also this kind of predestination kind of kids are meant to...
But I will argue with the main theory of that because when you bring in Morgan Freeman's character, which we should get into,
many people in this movie.
Oh, yeah. And let's just see, just again to say at the top of this, amazing people in this movie. Yeah. Like, I mean, this movie is...
Kasdan.
Yeah, what I was going to say was it's not just an amalgam of the hodgepodge of Stephen King stuff. It's also a hodgepodge of the other two components of this, Lawrence Kasdan and William Goldman.
Yes.
I mean, William Goldman wrote the original script, and apparently... I read interviews with Lawrence Kasdan where he basically just brushed it off, and then I read that William Goldman's involvement in it, and William Goldman's a fucking legend.
Yeah.
And then Stephen King also was like, yeah, Goldman turned in a draft, and like Larry rewrote it. You know, Larry punched it up. But you can see it is or Stranger Things with the Big Chill. I mean, why Lawrence Kasdan was like, I can make this.
Oh, yeah.
Even though he never did horror.
And it fails on a couple levels there, too, because it's not scary. It's not like, there's a moment or two of like, it's gross.
Yeah, it's definitely gross.
It's real gross.
Yeah.
Yes.
But it feels very dated. It feels like a little, for this movie came out in 2003, and it feels like if you said this came out in like 1990, you would have been like, oh yeah, of course.
The only thing that makes it 2003 is that the effects are better.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like stuff looks okay.
It's extremely 90s. I mean, again, look at the three people at the top of the ticket here. Lawrence Kasdan, William Goldman, and
Stephen
King.
There are wipes.
Yeah.
There are wipes all over this movie.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it.
I was stymied by that.
In a way, I admire it because it really is the project of like people who could do anything and get. You know, the budget was something like $65 million.
Yeah, I was going to say it's got to be a huge budget.
$68 million. Dollars.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, Stephen King at the time, he was like very pro Dreamcatcher, and he hadn't done press for any movies like in 20 years. Like, he hated his movies. He was like, this movie is great.
And really?
And he did massive press tours for it, which he never did.
He sold the rights to it for $1, I think, because he wanted to really make this movie.
No, that's his thing. He always sells everything for a dollar.
Oh, okay, okay.
But 2 years ago, he said, oh, he had just suffered. He had just been hit by a car.
Oh, yeah.
Stephen King, and he almost died.
Well, just like...
Exactly.
Well, that's why he wrote that. Yeah, he wrote that in because this is what he wrote. The first thing he wrote, longhand.
He said completely on OxyContin.
Whoa.
And that he hates it. That he thinks it's terrible. He goes, oh, it's awful. Just awful.
By the way, like that makes sense. That makes sense that this was written entirely on OxyContin because it is.
Yeah. And after a trauma.
Yes, it is a jumble of nonsense. Well, is this like the book? Is the movie? Is this very close to the book?
I would say that for a 90, the book is over 600 pages.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's a real like, that is epic an Oxycontin King book. The book is, now look, again, I am a massive Stephen King fan. I couldn't be any bigger. I love William Goldman and I really like Lawrence Kasdan a lot.
Sure.
I love these people. So it hurts me to say, but it was crap. I mean, the book was brutally bad and repetitive. And one of the only reasons I went to see the movie the first time is because he makes reference to it.
I was going
to
ask you about
this. Oh, I'm so sorry.
No, this is perfect.
Which is one of my favorite books ever.
Who does and when?
Stephen King, late in the climax of Dreamcatcher in the book, not in the movie.
Oh, okay.
He makes reference to it. There's like a...
So they take place in the same universe, meaning?
They take place in the same town.
Well, it's in Derry, Maine. And they were saying that in the movie, I believe, there is a couple like little throws to it, which is like there's... I think there's like a Pennywise lives on like a sign at one point, not heavily featured. But here's a question I had, and this is my bad memory of it. Is the name of Pennywise also Mr. Gray as well, or is that like the...
I think so.
Okay, all right. No. Okay, then that was my...
Unless there's a bigger Stephen King nerd.
Wait, is Pennywise an alien? No.
Well, you think of it in Lovecraftian terms.
Okay.
He's sort of it could potentially be an interstellar sort of cosmic.
Okay. All right. Like some sort of celestial being.
Interdimensional creature that's personifies evil.
Wow.
Sounds scary.
We have not yet really started to talk about the movie. And the fact is like, yeah, go ahead, Paul.
I was going to say also just another thing about the Stephen King book, just to even get like the original title of this book was called Cancer.
Yeah.
Whoa.
And it was written because, and this is a quote I have from Stephen King about it. It was
you talked to Stephen King?
I got him on the phone real quick. And
I do want Blake to talk to him.
No, he might be able to. He said the whole reason for writing the novel was the scene where the guy shits out the alien. And that's the scene that became the driving force of the book. And by the way, spoiler alert, the guy shits out an alien.
And if you think that's the only time an alien comes out of someone's ass, you're wrong.
He said, you know, the idea used to be the ultimate taboo was what's behind the bedroom door. And he's like, the new taboo is what's behind the bathroom door. Because most people now realize that they have cancer in bathrooms when they find blood in their stool. And he felt like that is the new terrifying experience.
That's so dark. But I also feel like cancer as a title would make more sense than Dreamcatcher, which is just an offhand moment where they're like, dud, it's we made this in arts and crafts.
Yeah. I have no, and this is now, so let's get into this.
I couldn't understand Dreamcatcher at all. Guys. We haven't talked about anything yet.
OxyContin's a hell of a drug, man.
Like now, like the memory house makes so much more sense right now.
Yep.
All of the storylines are all over. Oh, I don't even know how you want to start.
Let's like try to break it down. You meet these four guys who all have psychic powers. Like we have a therapist who can read minds. We have a guy who works in an auto dealership who helps people find their keys. We have a guy who's a drunk.
What's Tom Jane's power?
He's a psychic. He can read minds.
Oh, okay. Oh, no, not Tom Jane. I'm sorry.
Damian Lewis?
Yeah, what's Damian Lewis's
power? Why does Damian Lewis have this memory? Like, do they all have this...
They do say we all got one, but he's the only one who seems to
cultivated it. Yeah. They were like, you remember he used to talk about this all the time, his memory house?
Yeah.
But he can hear other people's thoughts too. When he's about to cross the street, he says to the guy next to him, what'd you say?
Yeah.
So, and I think they all can connect with each other.
Yeah, because right. when they're kids, they're all telepathically talking to each other.
Right. And it was given to them by this mentally handicapped child.
Yeah, they come.
Duddits.
The movie. This happens in the movie. This happens in the movie. The movie begins. We are introduced to the four men in their independent lives.
Yes,
and they all are kind of calling each other to check in. They're going to go blah blah blah, visit Duddits or whatever.
This one of them's casually about to kill himself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Tom Jane is a psychiatrist who is treating a patient. The patient leaves. He goes to his desk. This is in minute two. Pulls out a revolver, puts it to his head.
But can I say, just from a writing perspective, those are facts, what you just said. But what makes it really terrible is that it is the opposite of, look, I'm not a big save the cat guy per se, this Blake Snyder thing of like the hero's guy. But these guys are terrible people. The first guy, Thomas Jane, is like, you're a fat – he's writing negative thing about his fat patient, and then he like drives this guy, and this poor guy is talking about the opening monologue is about Carl's Jr. hamburger.
Yes,
that's what the guy's in therapy for.
Yeah, and then he's awful to this guy, and then he puts a gun to his head, and you're like, you're immediately like, I don't like, he's too handsome. Yeah. He's got this gun against it. Fuck him.
And I don't even understand why these guys are all slightly like they seem broken. But yet you're like, oh, how did they become broken?
Yeah.
Me don't.
That's why this is all lends to a book.
Yeah.
And not a movie, but the book is also terrible. So
what happens is that you are introduced to all the guys, and then
oh, by the way, I just want to say, when you introduce, there's one moment in Damian Lewis that, again, we're talking about wipes, where he's like, where he says something like bad to the fat patient.
And by wipe, we mean an edit that goes from left to right.
Like
where
Star Wars style. Yes,
Star Wars style, which is not something that is currently used as a way to edit.
And not in a story that takes place on Earth.
But they also did, I thought, like in addition to the wipes, they did like an SNL like, frozen caveman lawyer kind of pushing on Damian Lewis. Like the camera's like to the left and it's like whoop, whoop. Like it just like it goes across and pushes into his
face. Can I also just say that we're struggling to piece it together in a movie, again, from the writing standpoint, where they specifically just say everything.
Yes.
Yeah. Flat out, there's no subtext.
Almost every line is exposition.
There's like a 3 minute, and I'm going to play it later on, I think, a monologue that one of the characters does that is kind of talking to the audience, trying to sum up the entire movie to be like, it's an hour and 20 minutes in, but let me try to help you out.
How long is this show? How much time do we have to do?
Somebody's going to have to do a podcast about this podcast just because they're going to be like, guys, I'm 15 minutes into the podcast. They have not yet started to talk about the second flashback.
All right, so wait,
because there are, within the first 5 minutes, it goes 6 months in the future and then 20 years in the past.
Yeah.
And it jumps around through time. And then over an hour in, introduces Morgan Freeman and Tom Sizemore as equally as important characters.
I don't want to get ahead of it.
Why? My first question is that we meet Damian Lewis, who is
a teacher?
A professor,
a good guy professor. He's nice. Jason Lee seems like an alcoholic. Thomas Jane is...
And Jason Lee is like...
The worst character in a movie, most hateable.
He's full of jargon and catchphrases that are preposterous.
I was saying, it was like watching Back to the Future 2 where they're trying to make words exist that they don't. Like, you
Freddy,
bojo.
Bite my bag.
Criminetes.
Yeah, something bananas. Yeah. Too.
It's all, you know what? It's almost like they were like, I want this character to be a newsie from the 30s. Yeah.
Well, that is very Stephen King.
Yeah.
And that stuff that has taken, when you read a Stephen King book, he always has characters that talk in that kind of like, I don't know, almost like 50s, but rough talk.
Yeah.
And it works in his, for some reason, the tapestry that he weaves, you go, okay. You read the book and you're like, I accept this.
Yes.
Form of
well, this
talking.
Is the this is how this character is defined.
Well, let's take a listen to one of my favorite parts: the fuckeries and fuckaroos.
Oh boy!
This again gives you a sense of this is the first time all of our guys are getting together in a cabin. We don't know why, and this is the kind of talking you're going to hear.
Met some lady at bingo. Went back to her place. Turned into a pretty nice fuckery,
as opposed to a fuckaroo.
Obviously. Yeah. I'll admit I've had perfectly good fuckeries turn into fuckaroos in a flash.
Hi, Viagra.
Viagra? I'm practically at full salute all day.
You're remembering yourself in the fourth grade.
What, you having wood problems?
You haven't tried it, have you?
Hell no.
You won't believe it. You dropped that little blue bomb, your heart is a Louisville slugger for 12 hours.
12 hours?
Talking Yastrzemski. You don't have to need it to love it.
So Jason Lee brought in Kevin Smith for the day, right? To do Punch Up. Because that is like a Clerks scene.
Yeah, that it's is crazy. So crazy.
Honestly, as I was watching this scene, though, I was immune to how ridiculous he sounded because I was like, that's nice of him to be the one to cook dinner. You know that thing where you get a vacation home with your friends? You're like, who's going to really like take this mantle? And I was like, whoa, he's got his own recipe. He's got two different hot sauces.
Oh, my God.
Way to step up to the plate, Beaver. His name is Beaver.
Beaver. That's his name.
Yeah.
I forgot about that.
So we don't know why these guys are broken. We don't know why they're all in a cabin together.
They've been coming for 20 years. Jason Lee puts physical notches in a cabin I have to assume they don't own, that they just rent.
They get charged like $50 every year.
Every notch, and they're like, worth it. The thing that was crazy to me also was that these four dudes, in my opinion at this point, though some of them have more likable qualities, but they are treated so much like a unit. Like they are treated so much like, we're going to invest in all four of these guys. We're going to show them as kids and this long bond that they've had. They're going to do this nice thing for a handicapped child. We're going to really like these dudes. And then we're supposed to know that Thomas Jane and Damian Lewis are more important.
Yeah.
But and they also fall into that, like, that white guys that look kind of similar.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yep. And especially with a blizzard going on and some of them are
so
covered.
White.
I'm glad that you at least have a beard that changes length throughout the movie.
And then when they would flash back, other than the kid who is supposed to be justified, what's his name?
Tim
Oliphant. Other than that kid, I couldn't tell who the kids were supposed to be. Oh, no, and what's his name? Jason Lee's kid's got glasses too.
Red hair.
But the other two were indistinguishable.
Yeah.
I was like, wait, which is the kids? But they are a quartet of people who you're supposed to. It is like Stand By Me. They're on an adventure, the kids' version of it. They come across a handicapped kid. They save him from bullies. And then
bullies who are trying to make him eat shit.
Yes.
And the bullies are holding the shit. And I mean, it's a small detail, but it was a really perfectly formed shit.
They're already being punished. Like, you're punishing yourself.
Yeah, by holding
the
shit in your
this?
Hand.
And then they get superpowers.
Do they ever show? I kept on going, did I miss something? Like, does Duddus just.
I think it's supposed to be a reveal. It makes more sense in the book, that he's the guy who's got magic powers, and it rubs off on them. Just by being in his orbit, they get these powers, but it's really because he's this – I don't want to spoil anything, but he's –
Well, you can –
Why
not spoil it? You can, because it'll be worth it to, I think, at least – understand where we're going.
He's an alien.
Yeah,
who's got? He's the
counterbalance
enemy of the evil aliens, presumably in deep space.
So he's a good guy.
But he's a good guy, and he has given them. Now, why he is under the guise of a mentally challenged child? Wouldn't that be a very difficult life?
That I was really hoping you were going to explain.
Well,
I
think I can maybe help here. And say that the original ending of the movie did not reveal Duddus to be an alien.
Mm.
So that's interesting.
But in the book it does.
I don't recall.
Oh, okay.
I don't recall.
So the original ending is, and I know we're skipping to the end here. We haven't even introduced that aliens are in here. And we'll get to that.
When there was an alien, when the alien turns into an alien.
Yes.
You know, Damian Lewis turns around and there's a giant, like 9-foot-tall gray. I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
Well, like, you know, like, so, man, it's hard to like even Because you have to set it, I think even to understand what we're talking about, you have to lay it all out. Like, so they're in this vacation house. A man comes who's having some stomach problems.
Yes.
He's farting his brains out.
Yes, he's and there's a lot of bad farts in this movie.
There's a lot of like
comical farts.
Comical body horror.
Yes.
You know, like it's almost like funny David Cronenberg, which, by the way, is a type of movie I would love to see.
And he comes to their house and he's getting progressively sicker and his stomach is distended and weird and... They, you know, and he's getting sicker, and they go to the, he runs to the bathroom, they come home, they find, like, blood around the house, and he's in the bathroom, and basically, he has shit out this snake-like monster.
Yep.
Who opens up like a vagina to a certain extent.
He is like both a dick and a vagina.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
He but is
it's,
both.
And it's got teeth. Like teeth that run the length of its body almost.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's crazy.
And there's a and
it came out of his butt.
It came out of his butt. And that's how these aliens, I guess, it's like alien.
There's a bunch of shots where people, you see like their butts like blown open.
Yeah.
Like, because the guy falls off the toilet and you see like his asshole like blown open by this thing.
Yeah. And so they trap this slug-like alien in the toilet.
Okay, I want to talk about this scene for 1 hour.
Yes. Yeah. They said this scene took days and days and days and days to shoot.
Really?
Really? Yes. Is it because he just kept being like, seriously, the toothpick? That's seriously what I'm doing?
Yes, the toothpick.
So they come home, they see this ultimate horror, the bathroom covered in blood, the man dead, his asshole blown out. They have this creature trapped in a toilet, and they're like, sit on the toilet, Jason Lee, and we'll trap him in there, and then I guess Thomas Jane or Damien Lewis.
No, Homeland.
He goes to get duct tape to figure it out.
Which I believe he calls friction tape.
He does call friction tape.
And I was like, oh, some sort of special tape. Okay, that makes more sense. And then when he finds it and it's duct tape, I was like, no.
Ah, that Brit.
And I was wondering, is that because duct tape is like a brand name?
Oh.
No.
I think it is, but I think it is a Xerox Kleenex situation.
Yeah, I agree. Okay.
Okay, I was thinking maybe it's a British thing.
I would say
it's a British thing.
Oh.
Like, I think that Damian Lewis probably like, friction tape.
And then they're like, oh, interesting.
You know, I've been on this scene for 6 days. Fuck it. Friction tape.
So Jason Lee has one job. To sit on the toilet. He's not wrestling
but
with the
creature. But he also has one defining characteristic. defining character trait that sets him apart from the rest of the guys is that in every frame of this movie, up until this one moment, he has a toothpick in his mouth.
Mm-hmm. And while they were first interact with the alien, the thing that he drops are
his toothpicks.
So now, you know, I think we can all see, Curtis, you know, this is probably, as a writer, this is kind of the dilemma that you'd like to create.
Save the toothpick.
Yeah, you have a character who needs his toothpicks, but there's an alien.
This is the baby carriage about to go down the steps. Yeah. It's you know, this is really good stuff. And in the book, it still doesn't make sense. I believe he's either a former alcoholic or drug addict. I can't remember now. But the toothpicks are like his way of like curbing that.
Yeah.
And the stress or whatever.
You definitely like get, this is like his coping and he's in an extremely stressful situation. There's a blown out butthole man staring at him and he wants a toothpick. There's also like 20 toothpicks, but only two didn't fall in the dead man's blood.
Yes.
So, and it's still like in grabbing this, you're definitely going to brush the blood.
It's also a toothpick that's on the floor of a bathroom.
Yes.
Never mind a bathroom where a man has just died.
Yeah. And also, he's in this bathroom arguably for 2 minutes. Like, he couldn't curve,
there's a monster in the toilet. Like, there's real fear. There's stakes.
Yes, the toilet is like a bucking bronco of a slug man trying to come out and eat his butthole. But, and so he's like, gotta munch on a toothpick.
And so he's like literally taking his ass off the toilet to reach the toothpick to sit on the toilet.
This is where everything is wrong. And the tone is every single note is wrong. And they tried to make it, the whole thing, funny.
Yeah.
These guys are laughing through all of this.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Damian Lewis, in that scene, it's like a comedy scene you'd see in an improv show where someone's like, I gotta keep that alien in the toilet. Damian Lewis runs. It's like dangerous.
Yes.
And then he comes back and he goes, hang in there, buddy. Yeah.
And like squeaking a bike horn. He's like, Jonesy. Like.
Yeah. And the guys are getting the car wreck. Thomas Jane and Oliphant getting a car wreck. They pull each other out there laughing.
They flipped the car eight times.
Yeah.
And then they meet a woman who farts. Hey, everybody, we have to take a brief break in the show right now. I know, but we have to thank our sponsors. And you know what? The sponsor that I love is you. What do you mean you? I mean you, the people who actually donate to this show, right? These are people who listen to this show for free and say, you know what? I'm going to take out my checkbook, I'm going to open up my Venmo, and I'm going to send you guys some money. And I love that simply because we have the best fans in the world, and I appreciate literally every dollar that you send us. It helps us. It helps everybody here at Earwolf. You know, look, we're making a free podcast. We love doing it. And when you send us money, it's the nicest thing you could possibly do. And I can't say anything more than that, but I can thank you all individually. I want to thank our friend Scott Cole. Scott Cole. Sounds like a race driver in a 1980s action movie, you know. Maybe you were racing Tom Cruise and Dave the Thunder. Cole Trickle and Scott Cole racing down the highway. I love Scott Cole. And let me tell you, Scott, for donating $100, I'm going to testify at any trial that you are at. If you get arrested, if you get put on trial, I will be there. And you know, I'm going to say, Scott Cole is a motherfucking good dude. And then I'm just going to slam down the Bible and walk out of that courtroom. And you know what? You're going to get off. No matter what you did, you're going to get off. Please don't commit a crime, Scott Cole. Jared Isle, he looked at Scott Cole and said, oh, you gave 100. I'm going to give 150. Jared Isle, you're not an Isle. You are now part of an archipelago. Archipelago? I don't know. You're not anything anymore. Now you're part of a continent, okay? Let's Pangea your ass, Jared Isle, and say now you're part of the How Did This Get Made community. You are with us. Jared Isle, you know what? Ladies, if Jared's not married or if Jared's into guys, is the best dude because he is a smooth F-er. That's right. He will F you smooth. What do I mean by F? Fuck. Jared Isle, I love you. Thank you for the $150. Jason D. Sawtells, 200 bones. This guy is throwing out money. So much money, I feel like I have to give Jason D. Sawtells a lap dance. I'm going to give you a verbal lap dance. Ooh, yeah. Ooh, you're so strong, Jason D. Sawtells. Oh, my gosh. I love that $200. Why don't you come up to the champagne room and spank my bottom, Jason D. Sawtells. Jason, we just shared an intimate moment, but let me tell you something. I meant every bit of it. I will lap dance on you audibly. I audibly lap danced on you. Jason, thank you so much for this. I've said a lot of bad things about Jason's in my life, but Jason D. Sawtells, I have nothing bad to say because this guy reached into his pockets when you're deep and pulled out $200 to us. And I have to say thank you to you. We're all going to send you all something in the mail, Jason, Jared, and of course, Scott Cole. You all are the true champions. But now listen to some of our corporate champions. Oh my gosh, you like to cook, but you don't have time? Well, that's a story that I've heard a million times. You know why? Because I've told that story. If I was someone who was around a campfire trying to tell the story of my clan, I would be saying, well, I wish I could have cooked tonight, but I got waylaid. I was hunting a bison, and then I met a guy who sold me some magic stones. And then, you know, and my cave got flooded, and I couldn't get to the grocery store. Here's the deal. I wouldn't have these problems back in caveman times if they had caveman blue apron. But I'm not worried about caveman times anymore. I'm worried about now times. Because Blue Apron is a service that delivers to you amazing high-quality food with simple recipes that are easy and fun to make. And why do you want to cook at home? Because it has community. You can cook with your loved ones. You can impress your loved ones. You can just basically stop ordering out and have these giant bills from your Postmates or your Yelps and your DoorDashes. Blue Apron makes it simple and easy to cook. And you don't have to be an expert chef. But when you're done making these meals, you'll feel like one because their step-by-step instructions really show you how to do it easy. And let me tell you, as far as their, all their kind of their fish and their meat and their chicken, it's all natural. It's all good. All right. I you can get into all the details on their website. But the other thing I love about this is, say you live in a small town, you know, a small town where you can't get dick or shit. Okay. Well, they're going to send it to you because they're going to make sure that that food gets there. So finally, you can start eating in a way that's a little bit more appealing than just hitting up that old McDonald's. And let me tell you about the meals that are available in October. They got, Thai green curry chicken and squash with Yuchoy jasmine rice and cashews. They have roast pork steamed buns with black garlic mayonnaise and spicy cabbage slaw. They got seared salmon, fall vegetable hash with apple brown butter dressing. Ooh, that sounds good. And by the way, I've been doing this and I love it. It's great. Legitimately, I use this product and really, really enjoy it. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free on us with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/bonkers. Okay, you are going to love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/bonkers. Blue Apron, a better way to cook. All right, now back to our show. It is like you combine two movies, but neither movie knew that they were in each other's movie. Like,
yeah.
So like those guys were reacting like a lighter, it's even a lighter Big Chill because they're not even addressing, it's not like, oh, one of our friends died.
It's like a horror movie or whatever with all this stuff, but there is scenes that are Big Chill-like, like the one you just played where Jason Lee is cooking for everybody and they're all in the kitchen and he's like, got blown last night.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, what?
The dinner scene where you're supposed to get to know these guys, where they're all sitting around just like chatting and you're supposed, this is where you get to like these dudes or get to know them, and they're just awful. They just,
yeah.
Every one of them is, each one is less likable than the last at that meal.
And you're so confused by it because also you meet these characters in these kind of extreme moments in the beginning. Like, again, who was I'm getting confused between Damian Lewis and Thomas Jane. Damian Lewis crosses the street, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So he gets hit by a car. He looks like he's committing suicide because the cars are racing down the street and he just walks in the middle of it. He gets hit and he's like, oh, that was 6 months ago. I got hit by that car. But it's neither here nor there. It's not like, oh, this is a celebration that you're finally healed.
And he was warned. And that's the thing. They know they're psychic. They know they have psychic connection to one another. One of them, Jason Beaver, calls
Jason
him.
Like,
Jason Beaver.
Be careful.
And goes, be careful. Like, I don't know what's going to happen, but something's going to happen.
Yeah, be careful. And he goes, why? And he goes, I don't know.
But wouldn't it have made even more sense if, like, he was on the corner and a car just hit it, like, jumped the curb and hit, like, he looked, again, as an audience member, I'm confused. Like, is he suicidal?
Like, because we have two suicidal ones now a drunk one. Yeah.
But then there appears at the end to be, like, some sort of reason why it happened to him.
Right.
They're like, because that makes him immune?
He had to die? Because he said he saw Duddits. So he's like, Duddits was calling me, and I got hit, and then when he's dying, they're like, he's dead, he's dead. He sees Duddits again as he's in the ambulance. Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of POV shots.
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. And then he said, Thomas Jane mentions later, I think he's immune because I think he died.
But immune to what?
Immune to the alien sharing his body? Yeah, but that's not the way anyone has died. Everyone dies from a butt explosion. Yes. So no one has died yet from sharing their body with Mr. Gray. So we don't know that that's a death-causing situation.
Well, but the other thing is, Mr. Gray, oh God. Mr. Gray, the giant alien.
Who has a British accent. Mr. Gay is how Duddits pronounces it.
Yes.
It's very uncomfortable.
Yes.
Well, Duddits does a lot of uncomfortable things in this movie.
Well, I think one of my favorite parts of the movie, a part where I wish there was sort of like sitcom like audience applause, is when Donnie Wahlberg comes on the stairs as the adult Duddits. The reveal of Donnie Wahlberg.
Oh see, for me that reveal came when the credits rolled and I was like, Donnie Wahlberg?
Oh, well, the fun credits where we relive the fun dinner they had. Oh my god.
We'll get to the credits because the credits need to be unpacked.
No, like a drive, like
we have it.
It's almost like a rap version of the song.
I was expecting a Ninja Turtles rap. Where it's like, Mr. Gray, he saved the day. Nope, that was done. It's in a regular way.
LL Cool J from like Deep. What was it?
Deep Blue Sea.
You know what? Let's just play it for a second because it is what we just talked about. So this is the final line of the movie into the credits. This is a movie where we've just watched aliens and people dying, and it's a serious movie, and it's this one right here.
John, if that really is your leg.
I got it!
They're my friends. We're all best friends.
Here's the Duddits. Dreamcatcher.
It is.
Why is the movie called Dreamcatcher?
Well, that brings up
a great
point.
Why is there a Dreamcatcher? What is that part of it?
Well, okay, when we see the flashback where we see the boys either like if it was a process of getting powers and now this is like the moment where they finally fully realize their powers and they save another girl, that they say, let's do the dream catcher, where they all put their hand on Duddits's shoulder to mirror the dream catcher they made for Duddits in arts and crafts.
Yeah.
But
and then that's still nothing.
Yeah.
I mean, I assume it means like that sort of position is how they felt their powers is like, oh, well, we used to have to touch Duddits to get the powers. Now he's put it in us that we can. This is me taking like leaps and leaps.
Guys, I have brought some OxyContin.
We're going to do it now. We're going to fucking break this.
Oh, it's obvious. It's a dream catcher. So catch dreams.
We're going to go away for a couple minutes. We're going to take these drugs. And when we come back, we're really going to get this movie.
Hey, we're going to understand.
We're going to start over again.
Can you imagine? If we were like, how did we not get it? Okay, here it is. This is the movie. Okay, really? Okay, so Duddits makes total sense because
you gotta understand. For me, like at this time, I'm a Stephen King like mega fan, super fan, and I'm most particularly a fan of the Dark Tower series. That since childhood, I've been reading those books. Series that spanned his entire career. They're making movies out of it and all this stuff. But so I would read anything. And I was a huge apologist for Stephen King. I'd be like, I don't care because I love him. He's been my whole childhood and adult life. I've loved his books. And it was just crushing and crippling to read this book. It made no sense. And the fact that it went on for 600 plus pages.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it just wouldn't end when it
I
did
I feel like
end.
It was like his therapy to get out of the hospital. It's sort of like his journal in the hospital. Like, then release it.
Yes.
Like it just.
Yes, and he's not disavowed it, but he's like, it's terrible. It's just a terrible book.
I guess there's so many things that don't make sense. And one thing, too, that I haven't even talked about, but I feel like I assumed was that Duddits was long dead until they reveal that he is not.
Oh, yeah.
Like there is a remembrance of him in this time. And
yeah,
they're like,
cheers.
Oh,
they go like,
yeah.
Just a Duddits.
Yeah, that weekend, the night where he gets hit by the car and Thomas Jane almost casually kills himself, he says, I think we should go see Duddits this weekend.
Okay.
But I was also like, are they talking about his grave?
That's what I kind of felt like.
And also, he's an alien but can still get earthly leukemia? Or is that not really leukemia?
Or is he an alien in the same way that Mr. Gray is an alien in Jonesy's body? Like, is he just in the body of a boy?
I don't think so, because...
No. So who's that woman?
Mother. The alien jumps out of Jonesy, and Jonesy's still there.
You're right.
Duddits turns into an alien, and there's no
So
Duddits
who's the woman?
An adoptive
who's that mother?
Did she get, like, did she Superman him, like, find him in a field?
Yeah.
And then,
yeah,
like,
maybe.
Because she's
I think she's a caregiver, right?
Oh, I'm sorry, audience. An enormous spaceship lands on Earth in this movie. Crash lands in Maine. An enormous spaceship full of aliens crash lands in this movie.
But we're only going to spend like 10 minutes on it, and it's like an hour and 40 in.
Yes.
Yeah, I kept on writing, when does this movie start? Like, it really starts about 30 minutes
in. It keeps starting.
Yes.
Different versions of the movie keep beginning every 20 to 30 minutes.
We have not gotten to Tom Sizemore.
Nope.
Oh, my gosh.
Sizemore has a whole journey.
John Wayne's gun.
Yeah.
With a tracking device. He's going to stand in an open snowy field and just shoot a helicopter.
Yeah, yep.
Oh, my gosh.
The mowing down of the aliens.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. The genocide of the aliens. And the
Morgan Freeman's eyebrows, which were
Morgan Freeman's eyebrows out of control.
Why are the aliens standing in a field sending psychic message? There's no virus.
Like,
that's not going to work.
And they're just waving. Like, we're just waving.
There's no virus. There's no virus.
Don't hurt us.
But here's the weird thing. So we were going back to your point in the beginning. You're saying, well, Duddits trained these four boys to help prevent the alien invasion.
Is now happening as they are adults.
But I would argue that it's been happening for a while because Morgan Freeman says, I spent 25 years chasing this thing all around the world. So
we assume that the next arrival of aliens will neither have Morgan Freeman nor the four boys to combat it?
I think he says in the flashback where they go to find the girl in the drain, which is just a normal sentence at this
drain
point.
Girl?
Girl, I have to breeze by. Duddits.
Oh, I also didn't like that her name was Josie.
Yes, and there's Jonesy.
And there's Jonesy, because Duddits couldn't say either.
Yes.
I couldn't understand what he was talking about.
But they realize looking back that he said Mr. Gay, meaning Mr. Gray. So my thought is that these aliens have been here for 25 years, going back to when Duddits came, and there have been small skirmishes that the secret blue body
blue
army,
boys.
Blue
yeah.
boys, like has to keep under wraps, but that there is a bad alien amongst this race of otherwise pretty peaceful aliens named Mr. Gray who wants to start the war. That's what Duddit says, is Mr. Gray wants a war.
Yeah.
I think they could even be from the same race, and that crash landing, they are nice women and children who are like,
because no, I don't think they are.
You don't think they are?
Because they turn.
Oh, yeah. That's right. And they make like it a virus. Scary.
But Duddit yeah. looks like the same alien that.
No, he looks different.
He's different. He's a different color, and he's a little
but
nicer.
But he also okay. has a weird sharp tail.
Yeah, I think okay. They must be like neighbors. They must okay, be yeah. like of a similar.
And now, can we get to Damien Lewis's Stewie from Family oh. Guy impression?
Yes. Oh my God.
Okay,
which
so.
Which is funny because he is.
He's British.
British.
Yeah. yeah.
And he's doing a terrible.
So once Mr. Gray, the alien, once the like 9-foot alien disapparates into Damien Lewis.
Yes.
Damien
By the way, great
Lewis.
Disapparates.
Thanks. Damien Lewis. Damien Lewis becomes. This is the part of the movie that was the most confounding to
yes.
me. This becomes a movie in which his character is at war with himself, wherein who is controlling Jonesy's body?
It becomes the mask.
Yes. And Damien, yes, exactly.
God, I wish it had just become the mask and there had been a big mambo number.
And they have two-sided conversations where Mr. Gray is speaking in a hyperbolic British accent.
Hello.
Yes. Yeah. And then when Jonesy is speaking, nobody's moving, like he's not moving his mouth and he looks stoic. Also, Damien Lewis is trapped in his quote-unquote memory house.
Memory
warehouse inside his own mind, watching all the events of the movie happen out a window.
Yes.
Yes.
A window that he looked in as a child.
That part I could not make heads or tails.
And then also he's having interactions with Mr. Gray, the slug, inside his memory bank. And the memory vault is so weird, but let's take a listen to the dueling voices and when they're when they're kind of talking to each other. Here we go.
What was that, Mr. Jones? What did we just pass on the road there?
Are you speaking to me?
Yes, I am, Mr. Jones. Or is it Jonesy? That's what your friends call you, isn't it? Let's be friends.
Mr. Bond.
Why are you letting me live?
I'm borrowing you. We're going to take a little journey.
Fuck you.
I know what that expression means. I've studied the foul language section of your memory warehouse.
How about this, Mr. Gray? Eat shit and die.
Why'd you call me Mr. Gray?
Ask out for Ishtar Gay.
Someone told you about me. Who told you about me?
So that you get an idea.
Talk about the Germans. Don't talk about the war. I mean, he sounds like
it's
fucking
crazy.
Faulty Towers.
It does.
Holy shit.
Apparently, he was doing an impression of Malcolm McDowell. That was his actor's choice.
Oh, amazing.
Which is odd, though, because he's British.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have to
and
put
why,
it on.
But why does the alien want to be British?
Everyone would want to be British if they came here. They'd be like, what earthly accent should I adopt? Oh, the one with the most authority.
Yes.
Well, yeah, that's it. So that's going on the entire movie.
Oh, I'm sorry, Paul. No.
Oh.
It's not going on the entire
movie. You're right.
Because it doesn't start for at least an hour.
Yeah.
So the next hour and a half is when it takes place.
Right. And so they're having this.
It just feels like the entire movie because it's its own movie.
Is when Timothy Oliphant has been like kidnapped by Jonesy Alien.
Oh,
Mr.
after
Gray.
Almost having his dick get bitten off.
Yes, by
another ass worm.
By another ass worm or shit weasel, they call him.
Yes.
Oh, shit. Oh. Thank you.
And they're on that snowmobile.
Shit weasel is amazing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And then finally, Timmy Oliphant's had enough of helping this alien. He tells that Mr. Gay to bite his bag. He goes, bite my bag. And then Jonesy / Mr. Gray says, I think I will bite your bag and everything else on you. And he turns around and eats him.
Yeah. He becomes like a big giant like mouth, teeth
But
mouth.
The fact that this interstellar alien from a highly advanced civilization that's come across the cosmos is like, you know what? I will bite your bag.
I also love the idea
Pete.
That the idea of the memory vault is so interesting. It kind of reminds me a little bit of there's a
Sherlock.
Great Sherlock where, you know, like a
Well,
guy-
memory palaces are a thing. You know, like that's like a – I understand what they're referencing, but to – to make it an actual place that he is trapped within.
Yes,
is complete insanity.
And that he's having like a little chase scene in. There's like one part where he's like, oh, Mr. Gray is like busy. I don't know how Mr. Gray is busy, but he's like running around collecting files to then bring into his secret office, which for whatever reason, Mr. Gray can't access, but it's just an office.
Oh, they explain all of that at dinner.
Yeah.
He's like, well, what? They're like, well, what do you do about the stuff you don't want to forget about? He's like, oh, I keep that in my secret office.
That's where my Blue Bayou lyrics are, because I had to make room.
But that's also the scene where they say, I mean, it's just Beaver again going, Justin, I don't remember Beaver? The warehouse. What's the mind warehouse? Like, come on, you know the mind warehouse.
Yeah.
No, I don't. Remind me. What's you know it, Beaver. You know what it is. No, I don't. Explain it. Come on, Beaver. You know it. It's insane. Yes. It goes on forever.
It's talking to the audience, which this movie, I think, does a lot.
Like, oh, my God.
Like, can you please, like we need help. You got to explain it. Like, and which goes into when Jason Lee is dying. There's so many great little clips. I just like
Jason Lee.
Oh, sorry, Timothy Oliphant when he's dying. Sorry.
Oh, okay, go ahead.
Go ahead with Jason Lee though.
Jason Lee at one point, Jason Lee and Damian Lewis are standing outside their cabin, and a helicopter is flying above them. Mm-hmm. Jason Lee keeps a toothpick in his mouth while he's trying to shout words at a helicopter. Mm. So he's trying to both bite down on the toothpick and say his lines of dialogue. Take the toothpick out of your fucking mouth.
We gotta know
that he'll do anything for that toothpick.
Yeah.
And they also are barely raising their voices and are trying to talk to people in a helicopter. Like, hey, down here. And the people are like, just waving at it's nonsense.
Well, it also does my favorite dumb thing. We talk about this in Stealth as well, where people in helicopters look out the window to talk to people as if, like,
they're in
a conversation together, which is, like, always the dumbest thing. It's like, no one's like, hey, I'm looking at your... Like, there's no reason to make eye contact when in dueling helicopters.
Oh, how about this? This blew my mind. So Tom Jane and Justa, Tim Oliphant, are in a car accident because they find also a gassy person. And and Tom Jane's like, okay, I'm going to go get help. Tim Oliphant, you stay here. Tim Oliphant gets drunk with the gassy woman, okay?
Very drunk.
And a shit weasel comes out of that gassy woman, blah, blah, blah. But before that, Tim Oliphant just, apropos of nothing, goes, you know what I think? I think my friend Duddits is an alien. Wait a minute.
He explains the whole plot of the movie. Ridiculous. Yeah. This is amazing. Here. Listen to all the exposition.
Seriously, folks, there is one issue I'd like to bring up, just in case I should, you know, kick the bucket out here, turn into a goddamn
pizzicle. Nailed it.
Not that I think that's inevitable. I'm sure Henry or Jonesy or Beaver will be coming to get us soon. They're my friends. We're all best friends. Mm. Let me be very candid with you about this. So please, don't get freaked out or think that I'm some kind of weirdo who you shouldn't meet for the best fried clams in Maine. Just some innocent fried clams at the West Wharf. You see, the four of us, we're best friends, we all have this other friend by the name of Duddits.
Oh,
and
my
our
God.
Friend Duddits, well,
this is not crazy. Your buddy.
One day, a long time ago, he gave us all this kind of gift, this ability to know things.
This is in the movie.
I love the composer Sting.
Oh, yeah.
Just mind to mind. Do you see what I'm getting at? I think maybe our friend Duds is not from this planet.
I think
Duds is from somewhere else. And he came here to prepare us for something. Crazy.
Perhaps the events of this movie.
Talking shit about the only perfect person I ever knew.
Perfect person?
So also, that's
goddamn
not shit.
Good. I can't believe he's a human. And he should be singing his praises, not questioning what galaxies. I gotta pee.
That happens.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
That's like, when you just hear that, like, that's
over an hour into the movie.
And it's very, like, theater-like. It's sort of let me tell you.
It's a soliloquy.
Yeah.
With, like, the slim, like, veil of, no, he's talking to this passed out woman who's dead. But he doesn't maybe realize she's dead. But it was also, like, it sounded like they were like, you know, just in case the audience is lost, will you, like, improvise a monologue here, Tim? And here are the bullet points. And if you could repeat that your friends as many times as
possible. Best friends. Make sure you say best friends.
Because we, like, don't know if that dinner scene's going to get us all we need.
It smells like a reshoot. It's like, we can get him out there. We'll put the snow. Just explain the plot here, because we're finding people really are checking
also,
out.
Also, I really couldn't believe that I didn't find Oliphant handsome in this movie. It was blowing my mind. I was like,
have I talked about Sonos? I think I have, because I love Sonos. I have been on the Sonos train for a long time. Let me tell you about the Sonos train. The music sounds great. Why? Because when I walk to different train cars, I'm listening to different music. Or I can make every train car play the same music. Paul, what are you talking about? I'll tell you. Sonos is the smart speaker system that streams all your favorite music to any room or every room, all right? Control your music with one simple app. Fill your home with pure immersive sound. I love it. If you're in an apartment or you're in a house, you live with different people, you want to listen to different things in different rooms, Sonos allows you to do that, and you don't have to, like, run around trying to find a plug or a port to plug your thing into. No, 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 no. The app collects all your music on your phone, and you can pick the volume, the sound, any sort of music service that you subscribe to. It's all on there. It's so simple. It's so easy. So play a different song in the living room, bedroom, or even the bathroom, or the same track in every room, and all your music services are there. So be cooking in the kitchen, listening to Frank Ocean, be listening to NPR in your bedroom. I don't know if I can say NPR, but I just did. And then, I don't know, maybe in the living room, you're just going to be watching TV. That's it. Basically, Sonos is your music, your way. Easy, simple. That's the word. Sonos. Oh my goodness. I'm talking about my friends at Casper Mattress. What's a Casper mattress? Oh, only the most comfortable thing that you'll put your body on. How do I know? Because I am sleeping on a Casper mattress. But here's the deal. It's so comfortable. It's got to be so expensive. No, it's not. You're wrong. 100% wrong. Casper is so comfortable, and it's half the price of a normal mattress that you go buy at one of those stupid mattress stores with a sweaty guy or a creepy woman over you trying to make you get on a bed to try to understand what it would actually feel like to sleep on it. How do you try to try a bed in a showroom? You can't. Casper sends you a mattress in a cool little box. It, boom, opens up. It feels really big. You get to sleep on it for 30 days. If you don't like that mattress, you send it back. No questions asked, okay? And I talked to you about the cheapness of these mattresses. Cheapness in price, not in quality, okay? Because here's the deal, all right? Mattresses can cost, I don't know, well over $1,500, right? But Casper mattresses cost $500 for a twin size, $600 for a twin XL, $750 for a full, $850 for a queen, and $950 for a king. You can't beat that, okay? Here's the deal, too, and this is what I think is the best part of it. It's a mattress that combines latex and memory foam together to create an award-winning sleep service. Look at your mattress. Are you on an award-winning mattress? You are not. But it knows how to grab you, it knows how to hold you. Time Magazine. And we all love Time Magazine, said it's one of the best inventions of 2015. So if you're not on the best invention of 2015, what are you doing with your life, okay? Free shipping in the U.S. and Canada. Try Casper for 100 nights for free. I was wrong before and I said 30. 100 nights for free in your own home. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up and refund you everything. It's made in America. So do yourself good. Support your country. Sleep on a mattress that remembers you. And if you don't like it after 100 days, tell them to go fuck themselves. But you know what? You'll be fucking yourself because it's the best mattress you'll ever sleep on. Casper. But that's not all. You know what? I'm so convinced you're going to like it. I'm going to give you $50 towards any mattress purchase. Just go to casper.com/how and use the offer code how. That is casper.com/how and use the offer code how to get $50 off.
How is he? What's happening? His hair's just a little bit down and I'm like no longer finding this guy super attractive like he normally always is.
Well, he also is a creep. Now he uses his psychic powers to like hit on this woman and tried to get her to have fried clams with him at the best fried clams.
Oh, good. It was just my subconscious being like, you shouldn't be attracted to this.
No, yeah, that's like your internal.
Yeah, like red flag.
Red flag. This guy's a danger. He's an irreprehensible character. I think he's sort of flirting with this woman at one point, too, or pretending they're on a date or something.
Right, yes. The dead woman with the thing out of her ass.
He's not a likable figure.
Yeah, I guess maybe he like tried to ugly himself up because he needed to be a guy that people wouldn't be interested in.
Well, they're like, we got Thomas Jane. We got the handsome quotient down.
Yeah.
Who else do we got here? Daniel is pretty handsome. Yeah. Let's give him a beard. Alphonse, good looking guy. Let's just make him a creep. Yeah,
he's an alcoholic creep. And then Jason Lee, toothpicks.
Put them nerdy Buddy Holly glasses on him too while you're at it.
Oh my gosh, this is.
I also loved that whenever they would flashback to the kids when they were kids, and it's, even when they would meet with like when they come upon Duddits and the bullies are there, blah blah blah. Almost every single kid is given a ball or a frisbee or a piece of sports equipment to hold.
A paddle with a ball at the end.
It's as if when you hung out with your friends, you're like, oh, you bring a ball, you bring a basketball, you bring a football, I'll bring a frisbee. Well, it is so funny.
Those flashbacks really did have the quality of a Stephen King made for TV movie from the 80s.
Yes.
They looked like It or The Stand or something where you're like, this is terrible.
It felt like cheap like that. Yes. It didn't feel like there's
video.
Any.
Because the rest of the movie is actually relatively beautifully shot.
Yeah.
Like the look of things is relatively
nice.
It's
expensive. It's lovely. Like especially the main stuff, like all those big, like beautiful kind of snowy forests of Maine. Yes. It looks gorgeous.
And it's almost constantly snowing, which is like pretty visually cool. Can't believe it's like always snowing.
Two things. One, I think that the DP is an Academy Award winning director of photography. Pretty sure.
I believe it.
And then two, how about those animals running? I forgot about the animals running.
Yes. All the practical animals running away.
It was like a Warner Brothers, like an old, like what do you, like a Bugs Bunny or something. Yeah, all the animals were running.
Also,
and like repeating. It was.
They have red stuff on them. They have signs of the virus. And we know that animals can have shit weasels because a poor German shepherd suffers his fate.
He makes them eat it.
But Morgan Freeman is obsessed with the idea of a hitchhiker. Well, there was a whole woodland parade that could hitchhike out of this area.
That's right.
Like, there are hundreds of deer carrying this virus.
Why not crash 20 miles in? Like, it's right outside of Boston. The whole movie is about these aliens.
They can also turn into mist and fly away. Why don't they just run?
Yes.
Just get to Boston.
Why are the aliens standing outside of their ship waving? Why not just immediately, okay, you crashed? Great. Move. Let's go.
Let's
red dust as fast as we can.
By the way, Curtis, you are right. That the guy, the cinematographer, or the DP was the guy who did Mad Max Fury Road.
Whoa.
And Harry Potter and Rain Man and
Animation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It looks, I mean, well, again, I mean,
everybody
top of the ticket.
Involved.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, no. If somebody was like, oh, do you want to meet Lawrence Kasdan on this movie William Goldman wrote about? Yeah, fuck yeah.
That's what Damian Lewis said in an interview.
Stephen King book. Yep.
He was like, hey, when Lawrence Kasdan hands you a script that William Goldman has written from a Stephen King novel, like you go, yeah, it's an easy answer.
I kept thinking about them like calling their moms and being like, oh my gosh, I'm about to be in the best thing of my career.
It's all happening.
And then just the sadness of like, oh boy.
I mean, midway through they must have, I mean, but you read that, I guess they were all relatively lesser known then.
Yes. So this is before everybody's big.
Was Oliphant on Deadwood yet? He'd done
Go. Right. I think
Because it's 2003, so that's pretty early for all these guys, I think, at that point.
Yeah,
But there's so many weird things, and I imagine also, if you're adapting that book, you must go like, I don't know if this is a good book, though, because the book is, you know, relatively given like an average of a C+ rating, which is, so it's not like the best Stephen King book adapting.
No, no.
And then also there's like weird little things, this is a detail I thought was interesting too, that Morgan Freeman's character in the book is called Colonel Kurtz in a reference to Apocalypse Now.
Yep.
But in the movie, they were like, no, no, we don't want. Like, that's even.
They named him Colonel Curtis in the movie, which, you know, I appreciated, but still ridiculous.
It's just a weird thing. And to talk about this ending.
Still haven't talked about Sizemore.
Oh my gosh. Oh, we got to get into Sizemore.
And the finger shooting off.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
There's a lot of finger eyebrows, and dick
the eyebrows on Morgan Freeman
were
like
crazy.
Prosthetic eyebrows.
There's a part where Timothy Oliphant, the shit weasel, grabs onto his dick, and then he like continues to kind of talk and interact. I'm like, that guy, that your dick is bitten off and he is not acting like he's...
I don't think it was... Okay. He says it tried to bite my dick off.
Oh, okay, yeah, so yeah, it just got like in the area. Yeah. Okay, all right.
And then he said, I always thought my ex-wife would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He throws out like a fucking like borscht belt.
An ex-wife zinger.
Yeah, there's, Catskills comic.
There's so many lines that are masquerading as quips in this movie.
I mean, it's like old guys... middle-aged guys who wrote and made this movie that should have been made by young, aggressive filmmakers.
Do you guys think that William Goldman and Lawrence Kasdan were just ahead of their time and that this is an allegory for the refugee crisis where refugees are crashing ships into our shores and they are trying to spread their
virus.
Their virus. Yes. Yes. The virus of terrorism.
Yes. MAGA. Yes.
Well, right? That's MAGA. Make America great again, guys.
That's the H.P. Lovecraft thing, and who Stephen King is really influenced by. H.P. Lovecraft wrote all these Cthulhu stories that were very they weren't really that big in their own time, but all these guys, King and all these guys, were super influenced. He was an insane racist and xenophobe.
Really?
Oh, yeah. H.P. Lovecraft.
Lovecraft?
Really? Horrible racist and xenophobe. Huh. And all his books, that's what they're about.
Really?
It's all things coming out of the ocean to fuck the women and take the from the erudite professors and steal for the white people and take all their stuff. And from outer space, it's all references to boats and planes coming to America. Wow. And there's always a section in some H.P. Lovecraft story where they meet like some swarthy Middle Eastern like weird cultist, and it's dangerous.
All right, I'll audition. Where are we going with it?
So to talk about the end of the book, the end of the movie. So the end of the book. So they get Duddits at a certain point. Duddits confronts the alien. They have like an alien fight. And then, you know, Duddits dies.
The alien fight is so anticlimactic. So when Duddits turns into an alien, he's an alien for like 15 seconds. They stab each other with their tails. A shroud appears over them and they die. Yeah.
Well, I think because it's all a reshoot.
Yep.
Because, all right, so in the book, this is what happens. In the book, it seems like, well, I know it. In the book, Henry and Duddits use their powers to smother Mr. Gray with a pillow.
With a pillow?
Yes.
I don't remember
inside
that at all.
Jonesy's mind.
What? How do they get in his mind?
I don't know.
I think he can pull them in, can he?
Maybe, yeah. Oh my gosh.
So that's the end of the book. So you want to talk about anticlimactic?
A pillow kills the alien? Yes.
Now, in the original version of the movie.
And it takes two of them to push a pillow onto his face?
And in the movie, instead of turning into an alien, Duddits just does that thing with his finger where the swirly thing happens. And then the air gets all swirly, and then it turns into a beam of light that shoots the alien back into a wall, and it explodes. And then Duddits shouts, "I Duddits," and he falls down dead.
Yeah.
And then they all go visit his gravesite, and they sing the Blue Bayou song at his gravesite, which I do have a clip of.
This is the original ending?
This is the original ending.
That's how it should have ended,
and,
for sure.
And his gravestone has the Blue Bayou lyrics on it, which don't seem to connect with Duddits at all. It seems like that was their thing. It wasn't like Duddits sang Blue Bayou.
No, they sang it to him to calm him down.
Oh, okay, got it.
When they were trying to make him eat shit.
And like I said, in the book, there's this, at this climactic moment, there's this big major reference to it with, it says Pennywise lives, and there's actually a statue, and there's a little inscription from the kids from it saying Bev and all the kids from it and saying the Losers Club for all the lost out there. And it's a whole huge It reference that I think there should be a policy that you don't reference better things that you've written in your – it just reminds people how shitty the thing that you're reading
is. Or it's just like a coda to remind them that they have other work. Like, but remember this. Don't be too mad.
Available at Amazon.com. Yeah.
But it's also like I feel like those are the nuggets that you throw in so people buy the book. It's like, hey, you know, they have a whole thing about Pennywise. And
that's right.
Oh, shit. It's like
a
sequel.
It got me to see the movie.
Right.
I was like, oh, maybe there'll be some It stuff in this movie.
Because it's like it just is enough to be like, oh, all right. Yeah. Without that. Obviously, we have a lot of opinions about this movie. I want to take a moment to hear some second opinions. Also, before we get into that, I want to remind you that Blake Harris is on the case. He has been doing these amazing interviews with people from Stealth all the way back to Sleepaway Camp. And he hopefully we'll get in touch with somebody from Dreamcatcher, and everyone's kind of talking, so maybe we'll see. Even Lawrence Kasdan was like, this movie put me in jail for a long time.
William Goldman didn't write another movie until like a year and a half ago.
So crazy.
He said Good Will Hunting, right?
He had a movie with Tom Hanks that he couldn't get made.
Really?
Yeah. He's like, I had everything ready. He goes, a novel that was written by Richard Russo, you know, the guy who wrote Nobody's Fool. He's like, we were all ready to go. And like, nah.
The movie lost, you know, over like $40 million.
Oh, so. I would assume so. This is bananas.
So definitely check out our mini episode where Blake will have somebody there and also on Slash Film. But now let's get into some second opinions.
Second opinions from top to bottom. Crazy movies are fun.
They're not your first, but they're gonna be a second.
From the depths of Amazon they come. Second opinions for everyone. Second opinions.
These are second opinions culled from Amazon five-star reviews. These are all five-star reviews of Dreamcatcher. There's so many good ones here. Okay, let's start here from Mike. He writes, "This isn't the book. How can it be? Get over it already. Why are you making comparisons, okay? It's a small group of people's interpretation of the story that they read, okay? If everything was meant to be taken verbatim, then I imagine Stephen King would have done it himself. Do yourselves a favor, put your expectations in the trash. You'll have more fun in life. 5 stars.
You'll have more fun. Put your expectations in the trash.
Signed Donald Trump.
If you expect trash, you're going to get trash.
I'm going to put that on a pillow.
Put your expectations
and in. And smother an myself, alien. Yeah.
Oh, my God. This is from Jonah Fight. I like to ski, so having this movie done in the snow and having it involve aliens totally sold me. I hope those worm monsters don't come to Pittsburgh. I'd squash them. 5 stars.
Oh, my God.
I like to ski. Just like this is no.
His reviews also double as like slight singles ads.
Check me out if you also love skiing and live in the Pittsburgh area.
Brett, look out. If you act wrong, I'll squash you.
This is the one that I like too. It's just simple from Doc. Brilliant. I think he's actually reviewing the book. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. How does a man have elements of such a book floating around in his brain?
Oxycontin.
5 stars. That's it. Just impressed that a man can create. 5 stars. And then this one I like because it goes on a journey. By Doppelganger. There's just a cozy feeling to it. Stephen King style humor mixed with gore. It's a great movie. And I even like the story. I mean, okay, it's not great, but it's really good. Especially when you have to stay inside if you get like the flu or you have a broken leg.
What?
Hit by a car.
Yeah. Regardless, it's definitely worth a look. I mean, look, I've never met anyone who hated it. And if you don't love it, you'll probably just be glad that you saw it. And then you'll move on to your next scary or funny Sunday rainy day movie. But again, this is one of my favorite movies. And everyone's got a few of those. So I know you'll understand. 5 stars.
Oh, wow.
That sounds like Timothy Oliphant's drunks. Hey, guys, seriously, folks. Listen, we're all friends, so we have to be best friends and understand that sometimes movies might not be for you, but sometimes they are when you're best friends and your friend's an alien, and you need to stay in on a rainy day. That's just me. Sorry.
So anyway, so I don't need to bother.
Hope you understand.
I gotta say, look, I got it. Like, Lawrence fucking Kasdan.
Yeah, man.
He wrote Empire Strikes Back.
Yes.
Oh, he's amazing.
And I think he even said it. Did he write
Raiders. Return of the Jedi, The Bodyguard, Force Awakens.
In an interview I read, he said he wrote Return of the Jedi as a favor to George Lucas because he didn't want to do any more Star Wars. He was like, wow. I did it. And half the stuff that was in Temple of Doom, he wrote. He wrote that and they just moved it into Temple of Doom. He's like, you know, he's incredible. So I feel
like Silverado, Accidental Tourist, Grand Canyon, Wyatt Earp, Mumford. Like, he's written like a bunch
and,
of stuff.
And William Goldman, I mean, it's All the President's Men and Marathon Man. But I can recommend to your audience, Paul.
Yeah, please.
If you want to see another William Goldman stab at horror, It's available, I think, on Amazon Prime, but if not, it's on Shudder or something. Is a movie based off one of his own books called Magic, starring a young Anthony Hopkins.
Oh, I know this movie.
With a ventriloquist dummy. Ooh. And it's Anthony Hopkins and a ventriloquist dummy. I won't say anything more than that, but it's a thriller horror written by William Goldman, based on a William Goldman book.
Oh, I got it.
Highly, highly recommend that. It has this very Jonesy Mr. Grey quality.
Oh, I'm very excited about that. I want to see that. Final Amazon review here. This is my favorite one. All in caps. Okay, whoa. Wait. Tell me, honestly, you're in a secluded cabin in the woods and you look out the window and you suddenly see every single animal in the forest running in horror the other way? You're not scared? Whatever. You guys all smoke too much crack. This movie rocked. 5 stars.
Wait, what?
And those animals weren't even running in horror.
They were just trotting.
They were trotting.
Oh, my God.
And it was very cute, that scene.
Yeah, it was a cute moment. It was a very
like
Bambi
moment.
There's
like a family of bunnies.
Yeah, there's bunnies. There was like a bunny family.
Oh, my God. This movie, I also wanted to just share with you the tagline of this movie.
Put your expectations in the trash.
These are the ones, because it goes, four friends hung a dream catcher in their cabin. It's about to catch something it cannot stop. That is not anything to do with this plot.
Nope. The dream catcher is irrelevant.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
Entirely irrelevant.
It does technically catch the virus. The virus starts growing over it.
Okay.
It burns up.
Yeah. And so it can't stop virus or fire.
I know that his wife convinced him to change the title, Stephen King's wife.
From cancer.
Cancer to dream catcher. So that might have just been like now I got to weave a dream catcher into this thing.
Yeah, like,
now I got to go back. So.
Yeah, you're right, because it doesn't feel, there are a lot, and I think when Stephen King fails, and you would probably be able to speak to this more than I, Curtis, but when he fails, it's only because he's put too many ideas into something.
Sure.
Because there are a lot of singularly good ideas in this. Like the idea of that gestating alien that comes out of your ass. There are moments like in a cabin, very thing-like, can take over your body, but it just, then.
I cut him slack. He had been hit by a fucking car.
Sure.
Yep. He almost died. He wrote the stream of consciousness. I completely cut him slack, of course, because whatever, he's fucking great. But it was all the ways in Stephen King can be bad. With the like the way that the beaver character talks, that's sort of slangy, that doesn't exist anywhere. Yeah. A magical
kids
challenged,
stuff.
But like either mentally challenged or he'll go to the well often with like people who are disenfranchised in society, marginalized in society. They're always magical,
mm-hmm.
and he comes from a generation like the baby boomers where that is like obviously we make fun of it now. There's like the magical Negro in a movie or a magical this. He's from that generation of guys. So it's every bad habit and cliche of that generation of guys thrown into a science fiction movie.
But, I'll cut Stephen King the slack because he wrote it injured on OxyContin. I won't cut any of these other dildos any slack.
But why
reading that book and being like, oh, yeah. Why can't it just be relegated to the trash heap of like, that's Stephen King's worst book? Bummer. It's his worst book. But everybody was like, nope, we got to make an $80 million movie out of this.
Yeah. Or why don't you go, you know what? This Stephen King book is a little messed up. How can we cut out the stuff that makes more sense of it. And streamline it. Everyone's got
to like. That's the other problem, too, is that he tried to be too close to the material of the book. Stanley Kubrick's like, oh, this is whatever. Yeah. I'll take the names of the characters in a hotel with ghosts, and I'm going to make an awesome, incredible movie.
Yeah.
That Stephen King hates.
That Stephen King hates, yeah.
Probably
he likes the Stephen Weber version, right?
Every person probably just picked their favorite major plot that there are like six of in this movie and insisted that their favorite was in, and then that's how like the movie was like exactly the same.
All right, well, obviously this is the time where I don't know where you all fall on this, but we'll say, would you recommend, knowing that we're watching movies that are, you know, they're bad good, you know, or good bad. Would you recommend this to someone to see? I'll start and say, I do. I was thoroughly entertained, and we didn't even touch on bigger things.
We barely here's what I'll say. When the movie started to focus more and more on Morgan Freeman and Tom Sizemore and the army and all that, I lost steam pretty hard. Up until then, great. Loved it.
Yes. I'm so sorry. Did you want to go?
No. Go for it.
I've seen it three times. So, yes, I would absolutely recommend it. If for nothing else, just the Jonesy, Mr. Gray mask, you know.
Yeah.
That stuff was so funny to me. And jarring. I that alone is worth the price of admission, and the animals running also really sold.
I think if you're in like a snowy cabin and you have the flu, why not pop this?
Or, wait a second, did you broken your leg?
Or like if you broke your leg, I don't know.
You're there in the Pittsburgh
are worse,
area.
You guys understand there are worse movies and you just don't be too mad.
I've never heard of anybody say like they hated it.
Yeah, like certainly no, and like even if you watch it and you don't love it,
but it is your favorite movie.
Well, and everyone's got a couple of those. I think there's enough redemptive, like ridiculous fun in this. I mean, like just the fart stuff alone.
Oh,
I'm so incredulous that was in this movie.
Oh, it's crazy.
It's
comical farts.
Yeah,
it's like
yes, yes.
It's like Wet Hot American Summer style fart.
And then the guy leaves, and they're like, "Who opening windows?" Like, oh boy, like cut to like laugh track. Yeah. It was just insane. So
I would love a cut of this movie, like Curtis said, like where it is like laugh track and applause break. Yes. It's like a sitcom style thing.
Did
Lawrence Kasdan write anything else between this and The Force Awakens?
He wrote that movie, I believe, at like Sweet Home, like a. I call it like a not an older person movie, but it is an older person movie.
Right.
It was like Sweetest Kiss or something like that. Mm. Well, you can do that research yourself.
Yes. sorry.
But if you have an opinion on this movie, we'd love to hear it. You can call us at 619-PAUL-ASK. That's PAULASK. 619-PAUL-ASK.
Are you still taking calls at 619-PAUL-ASK?
ASS? That's a different line for a different show, but yeah, okay. I am taking it. But this is more for the podcast and Dreamcatcher. Or you can leave a comment on the earwolf.com message boards. But now let's talk to our amazing guest. Jess, you have a brand new show on ABC Digital. Talk to us about this show.
Yeah, it's called Serious Music. It's on, you can watch it on abc.com for free.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, if you got the ABC app, but you could just watch it for free. And it's about me and my writing partner, Zach Reno, playing versions of ourselves where we're two comedians who write songs, and like a Justin Bieber type thinks one of our songs is real and hires us to be songwriters. So then we like are undercover trying to understand the music industry and make him a less shitty person.
That's awesome. I'm very excited to see it. And you and Zach are amazing and your songs are great. And can people find them online too?
Yeah, you can like find the Zach and the Jess on YouTube and see some of our vids.
Classic vids. We'll check those out.
Watching those vids?
Yeah, just watch those vids.
Curtis, do you have anything you would like to plug? Talk about.
Fuck no, I'm a TV writer, so I wander the hills, just crying, waiting for the next gig to come in and being upset. So there's nothing I can particularly plug.
But
now.
We can plug your Twitter or your Facebook.
Sure,
or your Instagram,
sure, yeah. If you want to see my adorable dog, you can come follow me on Instagram or Twitter, or whatever. It's just Curtis Gwynn.
That's awesome. And Jason, what do you got to talk about?
Nothing much, really.
All right. I will plug that we will be in Anaheim later this month for the Now Hear This Fest Saturday night. You can come check that out. Go to nowhearthisfest.com. Also, check out Blunt Talk. I'm on that for a couple episodes this season. And make sure you check out our mini episode next week. You can check out Blake's article on Slash Film. He just talked to the technical advisor of Stealth, and it was a great interview. And you can follow us at HDTGM on Twitter and on Facebook. A big thank you to our engineer, Sam, Avril Halley, who from Movie Bitches, who cuts all of our clips. She's amazing. July Diaz, Nate Kiley, Marissa Zeitz, Leanna Waldron, and everybody here at Earwolf. Thank you so much for listening. As we leave, let's take a quick listen to all the main characters from the movie singing Blue Bayou from the edited version, the ending of the movie.
Saving
there you go.
Nickels, saving dimes, working till the sun don't shine, looking forward to happier times on Blue Bayou. I'm going back someday, come what may, to Blue Bayou.
A big thank you to Sonos once again for sponsoring us.
Here's the deal, people. Sonos is a smart speaker, okay? You don't have to hook up anything to it. You just put it in your house and you play your music through your phone. Their amazing app gathers all your music, all your favorite music services, and it will play it in any room. You can play it in different rooms. Sonos speakers are smart. They talk to each other. You can basically solve every roommate problem you've ever had because you can be listening to hip hop in one room, rock in the other, and God knows that dumb roommate that you had that loves reggae. No, but it's great for families. It's great for roommates. It's great for everyone. I love Sonos, and it's especially great when you're lounging outside and you want to change the station. Hey, you got it right in your hand. So good. Sonos, it's speakers that are smart, but not smart enough that they're going to take over the world like the Terminator. Get yourself a Sonos speaker.
This has been an Earwolf production, executive produced by Scott Aukerman and Chris Bannon. For more information and content, visit earwolf.com.
Hey guys, it's Ashir
and Nicole
from Best Friends.
Our podcast has been out for a few months.
If you haven't listened to it,
you should.
We've already asked the big questions in life.
Imagine if we could lay eggs.
Okay, sure. I guess we...
Wouldn't that be funny if you could eat from yourself?
No, because that's like cannibalism.
Not when you eat yourself.
What?
Hmm?
Answer listener questions.
Hi, Nicole and Sashir. What happens if Sashir dies first? I mean, I've never thought of it.
Well,
I would be so sad.
Oh, no, Nicole. I'm not gonna die.
Take BuzzFeed quizzes. Let's pick 8 foods and we'll give you a sex position to try.
Whoa.
This is wild.
Plus, we bring on other funny best friends to talk about their friendship.
I almost wanna cry. I don't know why that really made me feel emotional, but
it's because it's pure to talk about friendship.
It's nice.
It's so nice.
It's like so rare to like articulate it, but she's always there for me. Like I think she's just somebody who
Oh, I love this. I love it so much.
Oh my God.
It's really sweet. Best Friends with Nicole Byer and Sashir Zameda is new every Wednesday.
On Stitcher,
Apple Podcasts,
Spotify, or wherever
you get
your
podcasts.
Listen.
Oh my God,